Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
Hey everyone, it's Tawny and
Lisa.
And we are joined by one of our favorite humans, Kate, from Hi. Seltzer Squad podcast.
Hey Kate.
Hi, guys.
And how are you?
Girl, we are amazing, but I want people to know where they can find you. Follow Seltzer Squad at Seltzer Squad Pod. They're two other BFFs that host a sobriety podcast, and they're also based in the New York City area, even though Lisa left, but we can still say that we're based here.
Lisa upgraded.
Is still based in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kate's here, and today we're going to chat about when your partner still drinks. That's a question that comes up quite a bit is, you know, not so much sober dating, but like, what if my partner, my significant other, my love is still using? What do I do? So we're excited to hear you chat about that today, Kate.
I'm excited to be here. Friends of the pod.
Yeah, we're thrilled. I thought I would sort of start and fill you in on kind of my story, because I do have a husband who still drinks. I actually met my husband when I was a year and a half sober, and I had not, you know, I still do 12-step, and in the first year, my sponsor was really, you know, very serious about the fact that I not get into a relationship, and I did all that, and so I didn't. And then I met Craig about 18 months into recovery, and it was funny because we went the first night, you know, I had not mentioned that I didn't drink, because of just why would I? And so we went to dinner one night. Our first date was actually at a wine bar, and it was a Tuesday night. And so I was all nervous, whatever. And I'm like, what's he going to think? I'm not drinking. And so when I got there, he was like, okay, so what do you want? You know, I'm having whatever this glass is. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to have a sparkling water. And it, you know, it was Tuesday. And he just looked at me and he was like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, no question.
He like then, passed the normie test.
Yeah. And then, you know, I didn't say anything. Like, we'd been out like five times, including like one time when we were out with all my friends on a Friday night for dinner, and they were drinking and I wasn't, and whatever. And then I finally decided one day I had to tell him that, you know, it was time I had to tell him that I was in recovery and whatnot. And so we were talking, and I said, you know, I need to tell you something. And he was like, oh, here it comes. And I said, that's what happens when you're dating at 38. And so I said, you know, I'm sure you noticed I don't drink alcohol. And he looks at me and he goes, you don't? And I was like, what? How could you not have noticed? And he was like, I was like, you didn't notice? He was like, no. I guess, yeah, I mean, whatever. And I said, you know, I had a problem, and I dealt with it, you know, I've been dealing with it, and I don't drink anymore. And he said, he sort of looked quiet for a minute, and then was like, he said, so did you like have to go to AA or something? And I said, yeah, I actually go to AA. And he said, like, how long has it been? And I said, about 18 months. And he just was quiet for a minute. And then I swear to God, his answer was this: you'll be a cheap date. And that was, you know, that's what he was like. Okay.
You got set up by people. Yeah. Okay. Cause I feel like now in today, in like, I online dated like pre my husband, but I was still drinking. So I feel like it's a little bit of a delicate subject now for those who are sober and online dating, right? Like, when do you disclose? Do you disclose on your profile? Do you put like a little red herring in your profile to see if people could figure it out? Like, there's all, I mean, because I met my husband at the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you tell people who, well, tell us a little bit about that. And then I'm curious what you tell people about what to do with the online profile.
So my husband, he used to come into the bar that I worked at, and he was like, my husband's tall and blonde, and I'm like short and I have brown hair. And so for like looking out at everybody at the bar, like he always stuck out because he was just like physically taller than a lot of the people at the bar. So he'd come, I worked Fridays during the night, Saturdays, Mondays and Wednesdays. So I was like there most of the week, but he only came on Fridays and he only came during the drink special. And then he would like have a few beers with his friends and he would leave. So he was like very elusive because he paid in cash and he was like just this like normal person who came, never got hammered, never closed the bar down, like never did any of that stuff. And he always paid with cash. So I never knew what his name was, but I like, he just always registered as like a normal person to me because like I was there closing down the bar every single night. And it, I mean, I was in a relationship at the time, so I was definitely like probably, you know, letting my mind go places that I shouldn't have let it go because I was in an unhappy relationship at the time. But I eventually got up the courage to like figure out what his name was. I put like an APB out to all the bartenders and I said, like, if you find out this guy's name, like, we need to social stalk him. So somebody figured out his name, and then a friend of a friend added him on Facebook. And then it was like, at that point we were flirting at the bar. So the writing was sort of on the wall that like, I was interested, he was interested. And, you know, I came in one night as a patron and I just said to him, like, are you dating anybody? And are you gay? Because I really didn't know anything about him. Like, I didn't know anything about this guy. I mean, he came in with like his roommate, but that could have been his boyfriend. Like, I didn't really know anything. He was very elusive. So he laughed and said, no, I'm not seeing anybody. And no, I'm not gay. And I said, like, I have a crush on you, but I am in a relationship. And I sort of like was a little drunk and flirty, and we left it at that, you know? But then it was like always in the room. Like, it was like, our attraction was sort of always in the room, but I knew like something special was going on, and I knew that it was the push that I needed to get out of my relationship. So I broke up with my boyfriend, moved out. Like, this all happened very quickly.
That's a big move. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, after like we sort of established our like fondness for one another, I like quickly friend zoned him and was like, I'm in a relationship. We can only be friends. Like, I need to figure my shit out. I'm a mess. Like, I was very upfront, like, I was drinking a lot at that point because I was so unhappy. I was so anxious. So I just said, like, I'm not normally like this, but I am like a total mess. And he was very understanding. I mean, he's a normal person. I mean, I think at the time, like, my drinking wasn't that abnormal because of what age, like, we were so young. Like, I think I was 26 when, and like, that's just kind of the culture. Like, I was a bartender.
And you worked in a bar.
Exactly. So like, I think for him it was not unusual that I was drinking a lot, but I was still very ashamed of like my behavior. So it was like, I would get drunk and pee his bed. I would get day hammered and he would come home from work and I would be like shit faced at 6:15 p.m. And so it was like, I mean, those are definitely behaviors that I wasn't proud of, but I wasn't really able to stop. I was just kind of caught in that cycle of, you know, going to the bar, trying to restrict, trying to moderate.
Oh, misery.
Yeah, like knowing that I had an issue at that point, but still kind of being a little bit powerless to do anything about it. And I remember we celebrated my 27th birthday. Like, I threw a party for myself. And I mean, like, I ended up getting like on another level, like a whole nother level, like drugs, drinking, all of it. And I remember being awake at 4 o'clock and saying, like, this guy's gonna leave me because like I'm a fucking mess. Like, I need to get my shit together. And so I quit drinking like that day. And for a year, I mean, I didn't drink at all. And
just like, you know, that.
I mean, like, definitely was like white knuckling it. Like, right, I decided that I wasn't going to drink. I started reading the Quit Lit. I started like dabbling into the blogs. But it just sort of like, instead of doing the work, like I just decided to put it off into the corner. Like I was like, mm-hmm. I just don't drink anymore. And it's just something that I don't do. And I remember him saying like, you know, you can't have one beer. Like, do you think you'll ever be able to have one beer? And I just remember being really sad about that because I was like, he doesn't get it. And I don't think I fully get it. Like, I'm just over here trying not to drink so that I can be on my best behavior for this person, so I can be a better person. So that he doesn't leave me was like kind of my thought process the first time around. And I made it like with the exception of a slip over like Christmas, I made it like to my next birthday without really drinking. And then on my birthday, I was like, obviously I'm cured. I'm going to have a Bellini. Like my drinking problem is in the rearview mirror, and started drinking. Like, and then it was again, like didn't happen right away. Nothing crazy happened right away. I was able to like have a drink here and there, but then there was a day that I had three when I should have had two. And then there was the day I had four when I should have had two. And then there was the day I had seven when I should have had two. And I remember it was when I was really starting to go to the bathroom at bars, and I was like looking at myself in the mirror, and I was like, okay, like, why can't you keep it together? Like, I just, the mental math of knowing or not knowing when like an explosive event was going to happen was like starting to become a lot. Like, he just sort of never knew who he was going to come home to at that point. Like, he would come home from work and be like, is she going to be like dancing queen? Is she going to be mad? Is she going to be sad? Is she going to be fine? Is she going to be asleep? Like, I think we were all just sort of not, like, no one was in control. I was not in control. He was not in control. We were like being crazy. When that was sort of like our drinking pattern, and we got married that year, actually. So like half of the year was okay, because I was like doing my fitness to fit into my wedding dress. And so you're like counting calories and you're not drinking because it makes you bloated. And once I got married, though, it was like the hatch came off, and we went right into like a holiday season, sad depression season. And my honeymoon we had in like the end of winter, so it was like February. And I mean, like, things were just spiraling out of control. Like, they say that the disease waits for you and gets stronger, and that's maybe not true right away, but like it like whips the door open on the closet and is like, I'm here, motherfucker. Like, I'm here to get you.
I totally get that.
I knew at that point that like I couldn't do it. I couldn't just white knuckle it. Like, I knew at that point, like, you know, I think in his mind, he was just sort of like milling about. And we talked about it later on, since I've been sober, and he just said, like, I just didn't know how long I was going to be able to, like, watch you self-destruct. Because I wondered, like, am I self-sabotaging to, like, push him away? Is he going to leave me? Is he going to divorce me? Is this, like, some sort of subconscious thing that I don't deserve him? Like, what's going on here, you know? And I think he was like, you know, obviously I love you. Obviously I committed myself to you, but at the same time, like, it was really hard to watch you hurt yourself over and over again. So, you know, when I eventually got sober, I went to AA, hired a therapist, and really like said to him, like, I need to do this A, for myself, and B, like, I'd need to implement things this time around that I was missing last time, because I was like so incredibly, heartbreakingly lonely, just trying to white knuckle. I didn't change anything about my life. Like, I just decided to not drink. And so Friday nights would come and go, and I was just so sad and lonely. And that happened the second time, but at least I kind of knew what to expect a little bit. And I mean, obviously now I've lasted longer in recovery this time than the first time. So I'm feeling, yeah. I have a different perspective, but all the good stuff, it didn't happen really until like year two, year three, you know, even now settling into like on and on, like I'm still reaping the benefits.
Right. So how is it now with him still drinking?
In the beginning, he was still sort of drinking like we were drinking. So, you know, he would go out on Friday nights and I would decide to stay home, and then he would come home drunk. And there was a point where, you know, I sort of had to say like, hey, I can't really do this. You're sort of like you're sort of putting it on me that I'm a wet blanket. You could, like, our friend group at the time was like, well, Kate doesn't drink anymore. And it really made me feel sort of like the parent and the wet blanket. Like I had done something wrong. Like I was sort of like I was in the corner because I was like, couldn't party anymore. And, you know, he was still hanging out with those people. And I just said at some point, like, these people aren't acting like a friend to me. Like they're not being supportive of me. And it has really put a divide in our dynamic because you want to go hang out with these people, but I don't really feel comfortable doing that stuff anymore. So, I mean, the first, I would say 18 months were really hard with him still drinking in the way that he was drinking and me not drinking. Like the first Christmas, like I basically broke up with him and went and stayed in a hotel room and had to like decide if this was going to be like something that I wanted to stay in or if this was something that wasn't going to work with my sobriety, which was, you know, something you don't think that you're going to think about.
No. I mean, that's scary. That's one of the big things. That's like, you know, because in sobriety, you make choices. You have to make choices about what is okay and what is not okay in order to preserve sobriety. And, you know, to do it at that scale is hard.
And I think like, you know, to it's like self-preservation and to really put a boundary around this, around your needs was really hard. And it's hard for people in sobriety to like admit what they need and then stick to that. So, you know, I think it was a combination of him not holding his word because he would be too hungover the next day. So I would wake up on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and want to go do all these things. And he wanted to sleep because he had been out until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock the night before. And it wasn't like he was overindulging. It was just like our lifestyles at that point weren't really matching up. And I was feeling let down because he wasn't able to like be excited and be sober on a Saturday morning like I was. And, you know, like we went through ups and downs and he went through ups and downs. And there was a point where he was sort of in his own personal funk and he was coming home and having like happy hour every night. And, you know, it's been a lot of years of hard conversations about how we're both feeling about things and really having to be honest with one another about how the other person's behavior is affecting us in good ways and in bad, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I don't think that he really understood like how to be an ally in my sobriety until like probably a couple of years. I think a turning point for him was in his like sort of slump, he went to therapy and he obviously told the therapist that I had gotten sober. And I think she sort of framed it in a way to him that made him understand how important and how big of a deal that was. Because obviously, good. I'm not making a big deal about it to him. I'm just like over here keeping my shit together. And I think once he kind of understood how big of a deal it was, it was a breakthrough a little bit in our relationship. Like she really is working her ass off over here.
Yeah, no, that is a really great point. And that also brings up like what you were saying about not really knowing how to ask him to be an ally or not really knowing yourself how to ask him to support you or to, you know, be, we already are such, I find myself like such people pleasers. Like I don't want anybody mad at me and I don't want to be like a cramp on his style. So, you know, I'm just gonna go into the other room while he's cooking dinner and having his martini while he does it like in a very precise way. And he drinks one and then that's it. Like, I don't get that. I'm like, why don't you just pick up the bottle? You know, like that's not how I ever drank. And, you know, I was very hesitant to ask for anything. I mean, and that, but then it can build. Like there was, you know, one time that, you know, that it was more that he had more than one, which is like, he's a real lightweight. And I was trying to watch like a 48 hours or something in bed on a Saturday night. And he kept mouthing off and like, it was about some woman who was stabbed, and he was talking about some woman who had like stabbed her husband 137 times, and he kept turning to me being like, are you gonna stab me 137 times? Because I'm like, no. And then he went to hug me to be like he was just kidding, and I had my glasses on, and he just smashed my glasses into the bridge of my nose at like 10 o'clock on Saturday. I just burst out crying. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't do it.
You know, you don't know how hard it is.
Right. And I'm trying to be patient. He's like, well, why don't you say anything? I'm like, I don't know. You know?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people on our pod ask us like what to do when your partner still drinks. And I think for me and my recovery, it's been a few really tough conversations about how I actually feel. Like I had to say, I'm not actually a wet blanket. I'm not your mom. I'm not giving you permission to go out. You don't need to look at me if you want to go out. You can do whatever the fuck you want to do. Like, I'm not your mom. I'm not going to go because I don't fucking want to. And that doesn't mean anything about you. It just means that I'm not going to go. And if you go out and you drink a bunch of gin, you're not going to come home and sleep in our bed because A, you're going to smell like fucking liquor. Right. And B, you're going to snore really loud. And I'm not down with either of those things. So he knows if he goes out and drinks too much, he sleeps on the couch because it's just better for both of us. And the morning is better for both of us, you know?
Did either of y'all's partners go to Al-Anon?
Kate's
he
not
did.
Yes.
He went. So he was seeing a therapist originally who was also, his therapist was actually in recovery. And his therapist mentioned that Al-Anon would be beneficial to sort of understand what I was going through. So he went to a handful of Al-Anon meetings. And I think it was really eye-opening for him to not only understand my addiction a little bit better, but also the addiction going on in his familial situation. Like, he comes from normies, like he is normies, but even within the normies are a lot of unhealthy behaviors. So I think it was really beneficial for him to understand perhaps like why his drinking was conditioned and helped him take a little bit of a harder look, I think. So it just helped his compassion for what I was doing, but he didn't like work the steps or any of those things. He went to like, he like dabbled in Al-Anon a little bit. And I've also gone to Al-Anon for my like own perspective in my situation with people that have addictive personalities in my life. So I would definitely say that that helped. I think just now he's just like a super ally to me. Like, he's like, here's some alcohol-free beverages. Like, look at these, let's get seltzers. Like, he always has the fridge stocked with alcohol-free beer, seltzer, kombucha. And that wasn't always the norm either, but I think now it's on his mind because he has just seen like A, how committed I've been, and then B, starting my podcast and really coming out about being sober was a turning point for me because I'm really private about it in my real life. So I think once he saw like how proud I was of helping other people online, it's much more top of mind for him.
Yeah, that's great. No, my husband did not go to Al-Anon like pretty early on. And we've always had this kind of, and maybe it's because, you know, we met each other so much later in life, that we've sort of been very independent within our marriage on a lot of stuff. And he, early on, like I would say, you know, I would get up I loved this 7:30 a.m. meeting on 12th Street when I was living in New York. And, you know, like on a Saturday morning or something, I'd get up and go there. Or he was living in Westport, actually, when we met. And so if I was in Westport on the weekend, like I would get up and go to a great meeting in Westport in the morning. And he would never say, you know, a word. Like, boo, like, yeah, go take the car, do whatever you want, you know, knock yourself out. But he was also like, that was not going to be something that he was really going to read into. And it's funny because now one night we came home from, I don't know, we were in New York, and we came home and it was late. Like, we must go to a show or something. And there was, it just happened to be in the lobby of my building, this guy that I knew from one of the 12-step programs. He was waiting for somebody. And, you know, like late at night, like stranger sitting there, and jumps up and he's like, Lisa! And I was like, hey, Vincent, like, so good to see you, whatever. I introduce him to Craig. And then Craig and I are going to the elevator, and he looks at me and he goes, so is that like one of your buds from Budland? I was like, yeah. Like, he calls it Budland.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when I do stuff, when we're recording, when I'm like out, like all the stuff, my book came out, and we had been married at that point for like 8 years almost. And, you know, he was like all behind it and whatever, but not, you know, getting into the substance. He's never read my book. He says it's all BC before Craig. And it's true. So, yeah, like he does not get engaged in it at all, but he is nothing but supportive and respectful of anything that I choose to do.
Yeah. And I think the more I sort of gain time in recovery, I realize it's the less that my partner does need to be involved. Like, I want him to be supportive, obviously, and respectful, but he doesn't need to, like, he like, it's not his problem. You know what I mean? As long as we have established healthy boundaries in our relationship and are still working on our marriage in a lot of ways. And I realize that it's my job to keep my side of the street clean as much as it's his job to keep his side of the street clean. And if he can drink responsibly and still work on our intimacy and work on our connection and work on our relationship, then that's all I need from him as a partner and a, you know, like a life partner.
Yeah.
Like, he's not my sponsor, you know?
Right. And also, like, he, you know, he needs to, it sounds like he really understands and trusts you to ask for what you need.
Mm-hmm.
So if something's not right, you know, you're not going to just sit with it. You're going to talk about it. And he knows that. So I have to guess, and I think, like, my husband's the same way, that makes him less, like, he doesn't walk on pins and needles because he knows if I need something, I'm going to speak up.
Yes. Yeah, I also think my husband listens to my podcast, so I think that it's perhaps given him like a new perspective on what I was actually feeling, because I'm much more unfiltered, obviously, on my podcast than I am in our conversations in real life in our relationship. So I express my real feelings about things in sobriety on the podcast. And so I think it's helped him understand my perspective and also understand that it's not just like me that this is happening to, that this is an entire situation, because, you know, like I said, he's used to basically just normies. Like, he doesn't have like an alcoholic uncle or anything like that. It's like his life has been, his attachments are all very normal.
Yeah. It's funny, like with my with Craig also, like, his family, they're just not drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's like, what? Like, I grew up in a house where, you know, it was cocktail hour every night. And it wasn't, you know, my parents drank they were normies in that.
Yes.
Like, but they, you know, like many people in the 70s and 80s, like,
totally,
they had cocktail hour each night, which was like a drink or two, and it's done. Mm-hmm. So even just being, you know, introduced and integrated into a family that doesn't do that, like, there's not normally, like, when you meet, the first question is in, you know, when you meet in the evening, like, what are you drinking, you know? It's a whole
totally
different, yeah.
And to, like, my husband's dad is very much the happy hour guy, like, on the dot, and has one cocktail every single day, but it was never like in the forefront of our, like, in our life with them, like going to dinner with them. It was never really brought up. And when I got sober, there was a very smooth transition into, like, no, she's not drinking anymore. Like, that happened one time, and there was seltzer in the fridge from then on. Whether that was a larger conversation behind my back or not, I'm not sure, but it was, like, never uncomfortable. I didn't have to, you know, explain anything. And, you know, now I'm assuming my mother-in-law knows my podcast exists because she sent me, like, seltzer embroidered towels for Christmas this year. So it's like, I don't know, everybody's just so supportive of it that it's almost bizarre.
Wow. We have to hear about your thoughts. So if you're somebody out there online dating or just dating in general, what do you suggest? Like, what do you suggest to people?
So I have like a whole text thread of girlfriends who are sober and single right now. And so I get like a front row seat to their their like dating sagas of they're online dating this week or they're not online dating this week or how they're meeting people and even just like questioning their own sexuality. And the consensus seems to be two things. They're either saying they're sober right away in either bluntly, like I'm sober in my profile or I don't drink in my profile. And or they're putting some sort of Easter egg in their profile to see like if they can like speak code to another sober person. And it's, I mean, it's the cause of a lot of anxiety. We're always talking through like, when should we tell them? Should we tell them? Is this going to be a big deal? I think like on the outside of it, being like a person that didn't meet my partner online, I just feel like being upfront with it is the obviously the best policy, like being as open and honest about it. And almost like I use that as a litmus test of people that I'm going to allow into my life. Like even with friends, if I have a friend that drinks a lot and their life is a lot about drinking, then like we're probably not going to be that good of friends because my life isn't about that. And my, exactly. My like social circle isn't rooted in those things. Drinking happens around me, but I'm not like going to the bars anymore. Drinking is not the activity of my life. So I think in that regard, I don't know. Would you put that you're sober on your profile now? Such a interesting question.
I think I would put that I don't. If the question's like, do you drink always, sometimes, never? I would say never.
Yeah.
Because I just otherwise I feel like I would have to. But I don't think I'd explain the reason why.
Right.
And if there was like sort of the converse question of, you know, are you okay with someone else who drinks? And if it said like always, sometimes, never.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope there was like sort of a middle ground. So it can be between sometimes and always. Like I can, like a moderate drinker or a normal drink, you know, like how do you do that? Like does sometimes mean Christmas? Does sometimes mean, you know, just Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays and Sundays?
Yeah, yeah.
Like what does that mean? But so you can tell like, here's my legal head going like, what are you exactly?
Uh-huh.
And, but yeah, I mean, I would say whatever was the equivalent of, fine with someone who drinks and doesn't, you know, but is not centered on drinking. But that is,
yeah, it's like how do you say,
like a list of activities, what's fun for you, and going to a bar would not be on my list.
Well, I feel like everybody's activities on dating apps are like travel and hiking, and it's like, could you just like elaborate a little more if you have a drink in your hand during those things, because
that's
really going to be my litmus test of like, are you that guy that wants to, like, my husband goes fishing, but when I think of fishing, I think of sitting on a boat and drinking beers, right? You're like cold in the water. And he is doing like sport fishing where they're like in the ocean, like fishing, like actively fishing. Like they don't drink. And I always thought like
those like hats that feed the beer in when they're
no, not at all. Like they don't even bring alcohol. And so it's like, again, that can, I mean, are you the person that wants to go hiking and then drink craft beer at the end of your hike, or are you the person that goes hiking and then drinks water and goes home and takes a shower? Like I need more information, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And as much as like I'd like to say that I'm not gonna judge you, I am.
Yeah. And you maybe you're judging me. And
yeah,
you know, these are things that are done, like judgments that are made just in exploration of whether there's some,
yes,
you know, not passing on you morally, just deciding if you're someone that can fit in with my recovery and how I live my life. And it's interesting about the friends, because I found, you know, and there were like, in my book, I write about my close circle of friends, and those are still my best friends today. Like that's mm-hmm. like, but what happens really fast is you realize just who is really your friend and mm-hmm. who is like a drinking friend. Like that it was pretty serious.
Did has your dynamic changed at all as far as like, have your friends slowed down at all as time has gone on? Because a lot of like, I think a lot of it too is what age group you're in,
totally.
Because your social circumstances, obviously, like as I'm in my mid-30s and getting older, and obviously all of my friends now are slowing down. Like people aren't actively, like people are going to the farmer's market. They're not going to the brunch, you know, as much.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where I was, you know, because I was 38 when I got sober, and I was like, you know, really bad, like physically, you know, 24/7 with alcohol and cocaine. And like, you know, a lot of my friends weren't aware so much of what was going on, was because like I'd meet them for dinner, we'd have a couple of drinks, then I'd go home and take care of a kid, or they just go home, and they didn't see me pull out the bottle of wine when I got home or the cocaine or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah.
And they had really, when were grown out of, or, you know, were mostly grown out of it by that time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like there's, you know, for me, cause it was for the way it was for me, like I had a shift what I did with them. Like they would still all go out to dinner on a Friday night and have drinks and do whatever. I didn't go with them for a long time. Right. Or they'd still go to bars and I didn't go with them. But, you know, they were also very happy to do, you know, a breakfast on Saturday instead, or, you know, go shopping or go to the museum or do something else or have lunch and not, you know, they still felt like it was important to support me and make time for me. It's not like they leave you, you're real friends.
Yes. Yeah. And now I think even like, I mean, even it goes with friendships and with dating. Like if somebody is I feel like I would even want to be upfront and just ask, like, do you drink all the time? Because to me now it's annoying. Like it's such a waste of time now that I'm like, how much time, like how many dates am I going to have to waste to realize how much extra time like we would have wasted if we were together? Because it's like, I'm looking for like a normie. Like my husband doesn't hustle me about drinking or not drinking. It's never, I mean, after we sort of had addressed his drinking, it's never been an issue for both of us. Like it's never really been brought up. It's never been a pain point again. And like you said, with your partner, it was just kind of a non-issue. Like that's what I tell my sober friends that they should be looking for.
Absolutely. And I think the thing is that when we are out there drinking and in bars and stuff, we don't think there's any people like that out there.
Of course.
Know what I mean? Because we're surrounded with people. The people we know, we're like, well, they wouldn't be, you know.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's going to be an issue. Yeah.
Right. So we assume like everybody out there, it's going to be an issue. And you realize, and I think that's like a very cool thing about being able to meet people online now, just like the vast exposure outside of the bar setting, right? Everybody I dated or met, you know, was in a bar.
Right.
And now like, you know, I think going into somebody maybe that you meet online and you think, oh, this is going to like, you know, this is going to blow it up. They're not going to want to be, they're not going to whatever. They're really going to care. Like our frame of reference is our friend standing next to us in the bar. You know what I mean? So like, that's not really a good frame of reference for the rest of the world.
Right. I'm wondering, like, this question is for both of you and Tawny. Like, do you think that going to a 12-step program or more of like a group setting where you're sharing in person makes you more outgoing to sort of be upfront about that versus somebody that's maybe using your recovery tool, like a podcast or a blog, and not necessarily like speaking their truth all the time?
Right.
Cause I feel like now I'm sober enough to where I can talk to anybody about that. Like I don't really have a problem like approaching a stranger on a street, where like before I used to be so self-conscious and so introverted that I wouldn't be able to talk to anyone.
Right. Yeah. Tawny actually had a drop off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like what happens is that over time, in, you know, whether it's in 12-step or whether it's whatever, as we become more secure with ourselves and like ourselves better, I'm like, being sober is not something I'm ashamed of. It's something I'm proud of.
Yes.
You know, and it took a while it took being sober for a while to learn that, you know, which is why I think, that it's a lot of people going out and dating maybe early. It helped me that I was already sober for a year and really grateful for it, or a year and a half and really grateful for it and like committed to it. And it was, you know, like my happy thing. And, but that I felt that way, like it wasn't going to change it. But I think at first, you don't know how you're going to feel about being sober. You don't know how you're going to like yourself or feel about yourself. And you're really like, it's very raw. So I think over time, I am always like, when people ask me like, what should I tell people or what should I, whatever. And I'm like, listen, you know, I know ice cream from the rafters, but you don't have to. Like, your story is your own, and you can share the pieces of it that you want to with the people that you want to.
Like, I feel like the very basic, like, moral of the story is like, I'm sober. If you have a problem with it, this isn't going to work. Like, period.
Well, yeah, that's
because
right.
Whether or not you want to admit it, whatever point you're at in your sobriety journey, like, it is going to be one of the most important things in your life. And if you're not able to, like, level with somebody,
right,
then it's not ever going to be worth your time. 100%. Because it's just so much of your energy. So much of my energy goes into staying sober.
Yeah.
I can't not talk about it.
right. And it's also like, you, if you feel like you're somehow ashamed of it or something, you're not going to be happy with yourself, let alone. And the other thing that I would say, and I know we got to wrap up, we've gone kind of long, but we are not going to change somebody else. So if you meet somebody and you think he's great, okay, yeah, he drinks too much, but I think I can, I'll be a good influence on him and I'll change that. Whatever, don't stop right there. Unless that person is saying to you, wow, it's really cool that you don't drink. You know what? I'm going to try that too and see how it goes. And certainly don't compromise your own sobriety to try and change somebody else or to try to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Totally. Totally. Well said. So
thank you so much, Kate. I know we got to wrap up. You are a rock star. We love Seltzer Squad. We've had a relationship with you guys since you guys started, and we adore you. Everybody should be listening to Seltzer Squad podcast and go check them out at Seltzer Squad Pod. And
thank you so much for having me. I love you guys so much.
Thank you for coming. Okay, we'll be in touch. See you guys next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.